This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome back to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about personal guarantees. I am joined by barrister Rebecca Jones from 23 Essex Street Chambers in London. Rebecca is highly regarded by lay and professional clients alike and for her down-to-earth approach and her commercially focused advice. She advises and appears in a broad range of commercial matters, and she has a particular expertise in litigation concerning personal guarantees. Rebecca is also frequently involved in the delivery of internal and external seminars, including speaking in conferences held by the local law society. Thank you very much for joining me today, Rebecca.
Thank you very much for having me, and hello everybody.
Yes, and I should say that you're actually in Manchester. You're in the Manchester branch for 23 yes. Essex Street Chambers.
Yes, because so we have the two offices, and I'm predominantly based in the Manchester office.
Yes, so we should let our listeners know that, because 23 Essex Street has a Chambers in London and a Chambers in Manchester, and Rebecca is in Manchester. Good. Right. Personal guarantees. This is part one. So really exciting, because we're introducing the topic, explaining what it is and then talking a bit more about it. So tell us, Rebecca, what is a personal guarantee?
So in short, I would say a guarantee is a contractual promise to make sure that somebody else, and that somebody else may be a company or an individual, does something. So that person who makes that promise is generally known as a guarantor, and that's probably a word that your listeners have heard of before.
Yes.
Now, personal guarantees, they are slightly different in the sense that the person or the guarantor, it is generally acting in their personal capacity. So they're acting as an individual, and that's why it's called a personal guarantee. And they can take many different forms, but probably one of the most common types is where a guarantor promises to make sure that a company or an individual pays money back, perhaps arising out of a loan. You can also have what we as lawyers call C2IT guarantees, and they're basically guarantees that you ensure another party does a certain act. And an obvious example is probably where a company or an individual can't perform a contractual obligation to provide goods or services, and you essentially see to it. So that means you would provide those goods or services if the other person didn't.
Okay.
And in terms of personal guarantors, they are only called upon when the person doesn't do the act or pay the money back, as you know, the most obvious example.
Excellent. So obviously we're going to talk about in what circumstances might somebody ask to be a personal guarantee, or could somebody ask someone else to provide a personal guarantee for them. So we're saying that personal guarantees are when you guarantee to do something in the event of some another act happening. Right. And this usually, and we're going to talk about directors' guarantees, and we're going to talk about personal individual guarantees as well. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the circumstances that somebody might say, I've been asked to be a guarantee.
Yeah. So I think, as I mentioned a moment ago, the most common situation is probably in the relation to some sort of financial transaction. So you may be asked on behalf of your business or another company, or even a family member or a friend in relation to a loan. And often that is with a bank.
Yes.
But they don't just stop there. So you can have personal guarantees for car finance agreements or tenancy.
Lease agreements, rental agreements, anything that's got a value. A company can say, we'd like you to personally guarantee this to you. And if you're a director of a company, for example, a personal guarantee holds a director personally liable if their business is unable to repay money owed to it, and means that a lender has to come after the assets for the person that's given the personal guarantee. So it's a serious, serious thing. It's not a, you know, oh, I'll just personally guarantee that and walk away. You know, your assets are tied into this guarantee that you're giving.
Yes, it is. And I know that's one of the things that we'll discuss today. But it is not something that you should enter into lightly. And one particular one to watch out for, I think, is in relation to care home fees. And I say this having sort of dealt with litigation relating to these guarantees, because as you can expect, when a loved one goes into a care home, you may have to sign some paperwork. And when a loved one, you know, does enter a care home, you may understandably so not be in a great sort of state of mind. So I would always sort of suggest anybody in that scenario does look at the paperwork carefully, because they can sometimes be found in there. And they're not always, I'm not just talking about care homes here, just, you know, guarantees in general, they're not always the most obvious. You may have a situation where it's in a sort of hybrid document, what we would call as lawyers a hybrid document. So in essence, you're signing a document simultaneously. So it's for sort of one purpose, i.e. that the contract, but also as a guarantor. So it is obviously an area whereby you do have to sort of exercise caution.
I would have never have thought that care homes would be asking for guarantees. I would have never have thought that. I mean, the most typical sort of personal situation that I've seen is when you're a director of a company and you're guaranteeing a loan, you're guaranteeing a lease agreement and things like that. But when it comes to, I mean, I know a care home is a business, so they're obviously the business looking for the personal guarantee. But I would have never thought of a care home saying, right, the loved one comes in, but we need your loved ones who are looking after you and sending you here to sign a personal guarantee. Wow.
Yeah. So obviously, I'm not saying they're in every care home agreement.
Yes, but yes. They can exist in those circumstances. I mean, one of the circumstances that I've seen also personal guarantees appear in is for rental agreements. And I'm talking about, an individual goes to rent a property, their credit report doesn't come up as brilliantly as the landlord would expect, or, you know, they don't have a previous landlord's reference because perhaps it's the first time that they're going to rent a property. And the landlord says, I need a personal guarantee, to somebody to guarantee your rental contract. So they then go to a family member or a friend or a colleague and say, can you personally guarantee this for me? And in the event that that person, in unfortunate circumstances, cannot pay their rent, then you're liable for that if you've signed up to be liable for the whole amount. So personal guarantees are quite serious, I think, Rebecca, because they do come after, you know, the consequences of it being exercised is your assets, your private and personal assets. And one of the things I think it's quite interesting to highlight here is, even if you own a limited company, do not think that you are protected within a personal guarantee because you own the limited company. You do not have limited liability with a personal guarantee. And I think that's really important, because years ago, I used to think that you did have limited liability with a personal guarantee if you were the director of a limited company giving that personal guarantee. But let's talk about the term indemnity. What is an indemnity?
So an indemnity is something more onerous than a personal guarantee and would probably, to be honest, warrant a whole other podcast discussion in of itself.
You're more than welcome, Rebecca. We've got part two, part three and so on, all in the schedule.
But just to sort of flag up, and I think it is important in the context of a personal guarantee to discuss an indemnity too, because quite often they are in the same document and a guarantee may also be an indemnity and they may have sort of interchangeable terms. But as I say, it's more onerous. And the reason really is because in a guarantee, as I've said, it's essentially a promise to do something when another doesn't. So it essentially only kicks in when that person doesn't do that something. But an indemnity is its own contractual promise in its own right. So whatever happens with the other company or person doesn't matter. You know, it's not the case that they have to wait for them to default first. You can still be pursued in any event. So obviously the rest of this podcast is just going to be on personal guarantees, but it is important just really to bear in mind that there is potentially something even more scary than a personal guarantee, and it perhaps doesn't have quite the same safeguards, because we're going to talk about them, I know, but some of the safeguards that they exist for a personal guarantee are not necessarily or don't necessarily have to be present for an indemnity.
So let me just get this right so I've understood what you're saying. Are we saying then that with an indemnity, in the event that the thing that's been guaranteed, so let's call it a loan, just for an example, you've guaranteed a loan, the loan doesn't get paid, the lender calls in the loan and then calls in the personal guarantee saying, right, we now need to recoup our losses from you. If you have an indemnity in your contract, in your personal guarantee contract, are we saying that that default doesn't even need to take place?
Yes. So rather than the term being in essence that you will pay if that person doesn't, you essentially promise to pay. And that means that you have that contractual liability.
So it's like you're the person, or you're, because the personal guarantee is given for something. So it's either given to support somebody. And for example, that I gave about somebody's renting a property and you're their personal guarantee, or it's given for your company, a company where you're personally guaranteeing a sum of money they've borrowed or a contract that they've entered into, lease, rental, whatever. So you're saying even if there is no default, the lender and the person that's the guarantor can come after you if you've got this indemnity in a personal guarantee clause, even if there hasn't been a default.
Yes, in essence, because it's what a personal guarantee is what we call it, a secondary obligation, whereas with an indemnity, that is what we know as a primary obligation. So that's kind of the key difference between the two. And as I said, it probably would warrant its own podcast.
Yes. Well, I've underlined it now twice. That means it definitely going to have its own podcast, Rebecca. Okay, let's come back to personal guarantees, because you're right. We are going to talk more about indemnities and we will do a podcast on that in its own right. But let's come back to personal guarantees. What should people be careful of when they're considering giving a personal guarantee? What are sort of the key points here that we need to talk about?
Well, as we've already mentioned, really, you're making that guarantee personally. So you're not protected, as you said, by a company or anything like that. Your own assets are on the line. So you do have to be careful. And particularly because if they're well drafted, which they often are, because you're dealing with a big organisation who's going to have a legal team, they're going to be hard to get out of. And that isn't to say that you can never get out of one, which I know we're going to discuss. But to even get to that stage, you're probably going to have a lawyer, and that isn't going to come cheap. So, again, it's just really reinforcing the point that they're not something to enter into lightly. And, you know, at least if you have sort of, before entering into it, considered getting legal advice, then at least you sort of would have all of the knowledge and be able to enter into it, knowing and appreciating the risk. But I guess my top tip really would be, you know, only enter into one if you are happy to do the act that you're guaranteeing. So obviously if it is a loan or tenancy agreement, you know, that you're happy to pay back that money or pay that money if the worst were to happen. And if you think that would cause you financial difficulty, it probably isn't going to be prudent to enter into it, no matter how unlikely you think it might be that that would happen. You know, unfortunately, and I think particularly the past 12 months have probably taught us this, you know, we just don't know what is around the corner.
Goodness gracious, yes, I don't think anybody thought COVID was around the corner, that's for sure. But you're absolutely right. I mean, typically nobody enters into a guarantee assuming that there'll be a cause to ever for it to be exercised. And I think that there's probably, you outlined there, you know, only consider it really if it's an act that you're in control of. So if you're being a personal guarantee to your business for a loan that you're going to be in charge of repaying, et cetera, because then it's in your hands really to some extent as to whether the contract gets honoured in terms of what the guarantee is guaranteeing. And they're probably, I mean, it should probably goes without saying, logically, is more risk if you're a personal guarantee for an individual who is then carrying out the act that they have to carry out in order for the personal guarantee not to be called in, i.e. they are the tenant and you're their guarantee, or they are taking a loan and you're guaranteeing, personally guaranteeing that for them. So I think that definitely is a great tip there, Rebecca. And I'd say, you know, negotiate. You can always look at negotiating a cap on the percentage of your personal assets that a lender or the guarantor could have access to if they need to collect anything in default. You can try and do that. So say, for example, look, you can't come out after my home, for example, or you can't come after my car, or an asset that you try and ring fence, and you state that in the document. It has to be stated. Or try and negotiate the percentage of the loan or the amount that you're guaranteeing so it's less than 100%. So, for example, if you're guaranteeing a £50,000 loan, try to say, look, I'm only happy to personally guarantee £25,000 of that. That's another, I think, option for people to think about.
Definitely. And I think as well, it's not to say that personal guarantees don't have their place. And particularly, you know, in terms of, I'm thinking if you're starting a business or something like that, and you're a director of that business, you know, it can be really beneficial. And it is sort of put your money where your mouth is.
Yes, you know, definitely is. Definitely that.
It can enable you to get credit or raise capital and different things like that. So it's not to say that they don't have their place. They obviously are useful and can allow certain things, or, you know, or person with a bad credit rating, etc., and it can facilitate a lot, but I guess it is just exercising that degree of caution, really.
Absolutely. And when I was mentioning about trying to put a cap on the personal assets, maybe you can specify an asset, so you have one asset in the document that's going to be part of the guarantee, rather than you being open to for a guarantor potentially coming after everything. But one of the most surprising things I saw was that you can actually get personal guarantee insurance. You could get personal guarantee insurance, which covers up to 80% of your risk. So it's definitely worth looking at that. And when I was researching, I came across a company called Purbeck Personal Guarantee Insurance, and I thought, how interesting. I mean, why wouldn't there be an insurance policy for it, Rebecca? Is there an insurance policy for everything these days, and things that you would never imagine? But it's also worth probably looking into that as well. Can you get personal guarantee insurance? What's the cost of that? Is it commercially viable? Because anything that covers 80% of your risk surely is got to be worth looking into. So let's talk about a personal guarantee being unenforceable. When can a personal guarantee be unenforceable? And I think this is something that lots of people want to hear about.
So there are a couple of formal requirements that have to be present to sort of be a valid guarantee. And one of the most important things is it has to be in writing. And that's as a result of a very old piece of legislation that dates back to 1677.
So you can't just say, oh, we're agreeing this. You're personally guaranteeing, nice handshake. Or an email. I mean, you know, someone says, right, are you happy to personally guarantee this? Yes. Is email, would you think that would suffice, Rebecca?
Well, this is where I guess the modern world has to catch up with a piece of legislation from 1677. So things have moved on slightly, and it obviously depends on the circumstances of their emails, etc. But you may be able to satisfy the definition of being in writing via email. And also, interestingly, the guarantee will have to be signed. And again, as times have moved on, there have been instances where an email signature was taken to be a sort of sufficient signature. And again, it depends on the particular circumstances. But the key things really, as you said, is it isn't going to be enough if it's an oral conversation and a handshake. There has to be that sort of formality to it.
Yes.
And really is as a result of the fact that what you're taking on is quite onerous potentially. So the law does sort of seek to put its arm around the person who's providing that guarantee and make sure there is some element of protection. And guarantees are often given by way of deed, which is probably a term that your listeners have heard of. And that's basically a special written document whereby a certain right is created. So for our example, it would be the bank loan. So whereby the guarantor says they'll pay it back, that's the right that's being created. But if it's going to be done via a deed, they have to have extra formalities. And again, that really is just to protect the person. And I guess the sort of key things again for that is it's going to have to be in writing. It's going to have to make it clear it's a deed, and it's going to have to make it clear that it's been sort of executed validly, which in our circumstances, if it's a personal guarantee, it's going to have to have been signed in the presence of one or more witness, and then it has to be delivered to the person. Now, why I mention that is because if a guarantee isn't given in that way, so by deed, there is another way that it can become unenforceable, and that is because the guarantor doesn't have anything to gain from the contract, and the law requires somebody who's entering into a contract to get some benefit from it. However, that's sort of not always complete sort of defense to a guarantee, because the lender may be able to demonstrate that they got some benefit from the contract anyway. So particularly I'm thinking in the context of a director who was able to get his business some credit. So there's kind of lots of things that can all sort of stack up, but that is the sort of key points I would say.
So I just want to clarify this bit about the deed. So when we say a personal guarantee has to be in a document titled a deed, is that for every personal guarantee or only personal guarantees that apply to loans and from corporates to corporate rather than a personal from one person to another person?
So a guarantee doesn't have to be given by deed. It's just they often are. A guarantee always has to be in writing. So
right. So where was the deed bit? What was the deed bit that had to take?
If they're quite often given by deed, if they're not, then there's kind of an extra thing that has to be there. There has to be an extra benefit, in essence, to the contract.
Right.
In order for that to still be enforceable. I guess why banks and stuff may prefer to use a deed, and as I say, they are often used, is because that benefit that we just talked about with the contract doesn't have to be present. It kind of removes
any
issue, because really the deed focuses everybody's mind. They know it's an important document, and that's why it doesn't sort of warrant that issue in terms of there being a benefit of the contract. But as I say, banks and things like that may be able to get around it if they can show that there was still some benefit to the contract.
Yes.
And I guess one thing just to sort of finish off this question is that just because something says it's a guarantee doesn't automatically mean it's a guarantee. So
yes.
would obviously have to look at it in the whole.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, when we're talking about, is a personal guarantee unenforceable? Basically, can you defend it? Can you defend a personal guarantee and claim? Other things as well, as Rebecca, you know, check the date on which the personal guarantee was signed for the limitation period. You know, the maximum period allowed by the law to commence legal proceedings for breach of a contract of a guarantee, if it has expired, this may mean that defence for it is no longer enforceable. So always look at the limitation times. If you believe that you were under undue influence in signing the guarantee at the time you signed the guarantee, or did the lender, did the person presenting you with this guarantee fail in their duty to inform you to seek independent legal advice before signing? You know, did they say to you, you must seek independently, you know, because they are, if they're open to get their hands on all of your assets, and, you know, generally people's assets are worth money and the law does provide protection there, you know, you should take legal advice before signing a personal guarantee with or without a deed. And whether there were any changes to the lending after you signed the guarantee that you were not informed of, or that were not included in the contract of guarantee, where you say, Rebecca, not every, just because it says it's a personal guarantee, it has to have a certain format, it has to be in a certain way, there has to be, have been steps taken by the person that's saying, sign the guarantee, in order for all of that to add up and for it to be a proper bona fide document executed in the proper way. Everybody's taken the advice they should be taking in order for it to have the strongest legs, if you like, to stand up. But I mean, we've literally got time to discuss one more area, and I really, really want to talk about this. So I'm going to hopefully not put you under pressure by saying, can we just have a little bit on what do you do if you can't afford to pay a personal guarantee? I mean, you can't afford to pay, it's going to be exercised. What are your options straight up?
Well, I guess your first option is to try and speak to the lender or whoever it is and see if they would be willing to enter into some sort of payment plan. And obviously, this isn't going to be a substitute for any legal advice, but that's probably one of your first steps. Do not bury your head in the sand is probably another top tip to take away. But if they're not willing to do that, then obviously there's a risk that they're going to commence court proceedings. One option, obviously, as we've already discussed, is that they might seek to secure a charge on your house. So that is something that you may wish to sort of try and avoid. And again, you can try and suggest some sort of payment plan. And I guess depending on the amounts that, you know, the guarantee is for, there is potentially a risk of bankruptcy, you know, if perhaps, you know, the equity in the house or something like that is not going to cut whatever guarantee you have made. Well, if you're sort of getting to that situation, again, you're going to have to be seeking legal advice, but you may be able to enter into an individual voluntary arrangement, an IVA, which again, if it hasn't already, is probably a podcast topic.
Yes, we do have actually a podcast on IVAs, and they are very interesting. And it's interesting you mentioned that, Rebecca, because I would be very interested to see how a personal guarantee would fit into that, because obviously an IVA agreement is, you know, there's companies that help people put these IVAs together. They do show up on your credit agreement. So that is one thing that I was sort of really flagging up in our podcast about it, but how they would look at personal guarantees, because you've obviously promised to pay. An IVA in a way could, if a personal guarantee could fit into an IVA agreement, if you had no choice but to enter into one, protect you from that personal guarantee, because then your assets may not be under attack, essentially. It's interesting.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to depend on what assets you have. You know, if the person who's trying to enforce the guarantee, you know, knows that you've got some equity in a house or something like that, they may not be as concerned. But if it's a sort of different scenario, you know, the IVA sort of option might be there to try and prevent them going for that option, really. And obviously that I'm sure that the podcast deals with it, but the kind of benefit in some ways to that option is that you're going to pay back a portion probably over a period of years, and sometimes that can be attractive to the person who's trying to sort of enforce the guarantee, because if they go down the bank,
it's something rather than nothing.
So again, it is really important that if you're in that scenario, you don't bury your head in the sand and you try and get some legal advice and take steps.
I think that one of the things you said earlier, you know, when we started talking about if you can't afford to pay, what do you do? You know, I think it's a really good start to actually go to the lender, go to the person, go to the guarantor and say, look, I'm in trouble here. What can we do? And really think about realistic payment structures and plans. Because I have seen all too often, I think, Rebecca, where people, with the best will in the world, have committed to a payment plan that's just not achievable. It's too high risk, again, to try and meet those commitments. And then that falls out of bed and then it all goes pot. Whereas I think lenders, particularly, you know, as a result of the world suffering a pandemic, you know, are likely to say, right, what can you do? Let's talk about what you can do and keep to, because that will probably be far more better reciprocated by a lender than someone that says, well, I'm going to give you lots and lots of money back, but just give me this time and then it doesn't happen. It's a great subject. I mean, very quickly, the pros of a personal guarantee. In business, you may be able to borrow a higher amount of money, as Rebecca already said. It's a chance to expand your business or establish and grow it. And it decreases risk and increases security for the lender, because they're thinking, right, we'll lend this money. It's a business, it's new, or it's in growth stage, or it's during a pandemic time, but we'll lend it because we've got that security. The cons, obviously, personal repercussions. You could lose your house, your car, and other personal assets. If your assets fail to cover the loan repayments, you could be made a bankrupt. If you can't pay the loan back, you may have to seek court permission to become a company director in the future. So what an informative podcast, Rebecca.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. It's been a delight. And I know that there's lots more that we can cover for part two, and points such as, say, if you've got all your assets when you sign the personal guarantee, and then as time goes on, those assets are no longer there. What are the obligations of the person that signed the personal guarantee? So that's just one of the areas that I know would be incredibly interesting. But Rebecca, thank you very, very much for your time today. It's been a pleasure to record with you.
Thank you.
And what I'll say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcast. And you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you very much for listening.